kiss is still a kiss. A sigh's just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
It's a privilege to meet you, sir. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I'm joined, as always, by
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And last week, we talked about Inherent Vice. And this week, due to a What's Up, Doc connection, we will be discussing the movie What's Up, Doc. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on a suggestion rungs sent in from you, the listeners, and ones we brought as your hosts. We will be discussing in full spoiler detail What's Up, Doc. So if you've never seen it from 1972, I believe, you can rent it on Amazon. It is streamable, but you have to pay, not free streaming. And it's only $1.99, though. It's a cheap one this week.
Yeah.
And or you can get it from your library, or maybe if you're international, it's actually streaming for you, but it was not for us. So if you do not want to be spoiled, do not listen ahead, although I hear some people just listen to the movie podcast even if they haven't actually seen the movie, which is something a crazy person would do.
It's like reading the Wikipedia page before you go to see the movie, just so you know what to expect.
Yeah, but
you won't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, we could get down this whole tangent, but like, a movie podcast isn't we're not recapping the movie. We're talking about like, oh, I liked when they did this thing, or
right.
I mean, we're not
some podcasts do that, but
some podcasts do like a straight recap of like this happened, then this happened. We try not to do that, so it would make even less sense, but yeah. I don't know. Some crazy people apparently do listen to movie podcasts without seeing the movie. So if that's you, go ahead and listen ahead. If you do not want to be spoiled on What's Up, Doc, we will put the timestamp in the description if you want to jump forward to when we start talking about our ladder rungs and suggestions to hear what we're going to be covering next week. Labor Day week next week, Brendan.
I do that with some movies. I did that with Old when that came out earlier this summer.
I want to see Old.
I wish I could stream it somewhere. Well, I knew I wasn't going to see it, but I also was intrigued enough that I wanted to know like what people thought of it. And so I listen to people
give reviews sometimes. I don't really like to be spoiled on movies, but if like people will talk about their general like takeaways for movies, I mean, that's cool. If people enjoy the Movie Ladder Podcast without seeing the movie, that's great. But
that's cool.
You know, yeah. I think it's even more enhanced if you watch the movie.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's like watching What If without actually watching all of the MCU before it.
Yeah, that would be weird as well. What If has been great, though.
What If has been fun, yeah.
We have another episode of What If tomorrow morning. That's fun.
Yeah. Like, my sister has been watching all of the MCUs and catching up with all of the movies she missed. She watched WandaVision, Loki, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier without having seen all the 28 films in the MCU to that point.
Interesting.
Like, she had seen a few of them. She had seen Iron Man. She had seen the first Avengers movie. She had seen maybe Ant-Man, but, like, had barely seen anything. But was like, I want to watch these Marvel TV shows. And so she did that. And now she's, like, going back and watching all the Marvel movies in chronological order to try to get context.
She should do a podcast as she goes through them.
Yes, you should.
Yeah, for your super ears only or something.
Yeah,
like
right.
I was gonna say something else too, and it blanked. Oh yeah. As we're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Brendan, what was your reaction to the Spider-Man trailer?
God, get kidding. The fuck out.
I don't know if other people listening to this podcast are as plugged into like Ringer podcast mostly, but every single podcast is a reaction to the damn Spider-Man trailer.
I'm sorry, I'm not Brendan. My name is Mortimer Jones, and I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never heard of Spider-Man.
Who's Mortimer Jones?
I don't know. I was just trying to come up with an alias. I was trying to come up with an alias.
Alias is a show about a spy.
Exactly.
We are really off the rails already, but that's fine, because this movie that we're going to talk about was pretty off the rails, so I think that's fitting.
Yay!
You should stream What's Up, Doc, though. It's only $1.99 on Amazon. Yeah. It's rated on, like, AFI's list of the top 100 comedies, pretty high.
Number 61 on the top 100 comedies of all time on the AFI list. Number 68 on Best Love Stories.
Okay.
I don't know
if I have some quarrels with that.
Yeah.
comedy. I mean, I don't know if it's the funniest. I don't know if it's the 68th funniest movie I've ever seen or 61st, but
right.
It's funny. And it's fun. It's a, you know, just like a quick 90-minute in and out, and right. I liked it. We'll get to it, but
we'll get to it.
But as always, send your feedback to us at Ladder Movie on Twitter. The movieladder@gmail.com is our email address. Send those emails into Brendan, and follow us on Letterboxd, The Movie Ladder. We always post our movies in there. We have our lists of each ladder. You can see season one, you can see season two. We have a watch list, so you can see all the movies that have ever been suggested on this podcast. It is ever growing. But if you're looking for something to watch, check out that watch list. And just check out Letterboxd in general. It's a great service. Highly recommend it. Indeed. You know, you can log porn movies on Letterboxd now. I'm not even kidding. That's a real thing. You have to turn
it
on.
Is that new or is that?
Yeah, they announced it like 2 weeks ago, and it's a setting. If you go into your Letterboxd settings, you can turn on adult films, and they will show up.
You have to like open a curtain.
In
the back of your Letterbox.
Yeah. Just a room, and you feel like you're not supposed to be in there because you're not yet 18, but you snuck in there. Yeah. I don't think I would be interested in doing that, but there might be
I'm good. My life is fine.
Yeah. I mean, the rule with Letterbox, you can't log a movie until you finish it.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. How many people are finishing porn movies?
Zach, this is a road I don't think we need to go down on this podcast.
last night I was up until 1 a.m. recording a podcast with Avin Chester, so I think I'm just a little loopy tonight.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, full five pretties for that podcast. Nice. Speaking of full five pretties, Brennan, what's the best thing you watched this week?
I watched a few different things this week. I covered a Best Picture blind spot, and I went and watched Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman.
Ooh, yes.
1992, Best Picture winner, Best Director from Clint Eastwood, I believe. He also won Best Director that year. Really enjoyed it. It was a great send-up of the classic Western and subversion of the classic Western tropes. None of these guys are really heroes. None of these guys come out clean. Everything that happens has consequences, unlike some of the classic Westerns of the 50s. I really, really enjoyed it. It was what we call a whiskey movie. Like, it was really nice to sit back on the couch with a glass of whiskey and just sort of let this movie wash over me.
Yeah. I watched it a few months ago. I also filled that blind spot maybe February or March. Let's see when I watched it. Watched it when I was watching all of those Westerns. It was the last Western I watched. So I appreciated watching that after having watched a whole bunch of Westerns over the month or two prior. I also really liked it. And it's that last act, I remember being
really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I noted that Saul Rubinek is like the audience avatar in that movie.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's a writer, you know, you might as well be, he's kind of a podcaster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's very good in it. And I also watched, a movie that probably should have come up as a connection from The Long Goodbye. I followed Gene Hackman on my personal ladder to the 1975, detective thriller Night Moves.
Does it have a song in it?
It does not. His main character that he plays is very similar to our recently covered Philip Marlowe stories. So I'm surprised Night Moves didn't come up from anybody, but highly recommend checking that out if you're sad to see Detective Month be over for us specifically on the podcast.
For now.
Night Moves would be a good one that I recommend.
I'd have to check out Night Moves.
What about you?
Well, I have a lot of different types of choices to bring up this week. I had one that was a very fun theater experience that I did. Mm-hmm. I had one that was a very heavy movie that you also watched.
Yes.
I have a TV show that was really good that I watched this week that I'm like halfway through the season of. Uh-oh. I don't know which one to do. I will give a shout out to Come and See, because I feel like this is probably the one that the most of our listeners have not seen, if I'd guessed. Mm-hmm. I know Olin's seen it. You obviously have now, based on my recommendation. Yep. It was Russia week, so we had to watch a movie that was made in Russia, or maybe it was the Soviet Union. I don't remember how it was.
Criterion Challenge.
For the Criterion Challenge. And I had already seen Solaris, so my choice was Come and See, which is another Russian movie. It takes place during World War II, and it is just very, it's very brutal, very bleak. It's just super intense. It's about a young boy, and his village is invaded by Nazis, and you just follow him along this journey where he's, I don't want to
basically experiencing much. All of the atrocities of war.
Yes,
is the you best see some.
I mean, it
they're,
is just
they're actual brutal atrocities. It's basically a horror movie.
Yeah,
like I mean, the score is intense. The setting and cinematography are incredible. The acting is out of this world for a child
especially
actor,
especially for kid actor. Yeah, you yeah, you feel like you're really transported into this time. And I do think, absolutely. You know, some war movies really capture the brutality of war. And this was one where you just see just the casualties and the civilians.
I couldn't even rate it. I couldn't even rate it afterwards. I was like, I don't even know how to rate something like this.
Yeah, so this came out in 1985, and I do have a list for my top 1985 movies, because obviously Back to the Future came out that year, Clue, and it was the year I was born, so I did add this, I think I put it third behind Clue and Back to the Future. This might be a better crafted movie, but I would never watch this movie again, I don't think. But I would recommend, if you're looking for something that is not going to be very light, if you're really want to sit down and I mean you're reading subtitles listening to Russian the whole time as well, so you're really kind of captivated by
it. It is over 2 hours. I mean you're in for a long haul. It's a good Sunday afternoon movie.
Have something fun to do afterwards.
Have another movie lined up that's very light for you afterwards. I will have to go back and put both Unforgiven and Come and See in my Letterbox lists for those respective years. So thanks for the reminder. I did not do that earlier.
Yeah, because you have lists for every year of your life, right?
I do. Autobiographical.
Yeah, and I do. It's interesting the way that this lined up. So I do a monthly movie challenge as well. And the monthly movie challenge, it's Eastern Europe week or Eastern Europe month, and it was Russia week for the Criterion Challenge. So I didn't want to do the same movie for both. So the other movie I'm going to watch is Tarkovsky's Stalker. He also made Solaris, and that's the one he's the most famous for. Stalker sounds very cool, though. It's also in the Criterion Collection, so it could have worked for either. And that challenge ends tonight, so I might watch Stalker when we get off this podcast if I'm feeling up to it. So we will see.
Fall asleep, but we'll see.
No, I don't know. It's not gonna be that late. So,
right.
Yeah, and I did actually one other thing with Come and See. I've never heard Quentin Tarantino talk about this movie, but there are a lot of things in this movie that reminded me of Inglourious Basterds.
For sure.
Not just the setting, but just there were some scenes, especially the opening scene, reminded me of the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah, for sure.
So I would be curious if he's ever referenced this as something that he was working from with Inglourious Basterds. So made me want to go back and watch. I would watch Inglourious Basterds. If that came up on this podcast, I think that would be a more fun movie to cover. So.
Cordellami.
Also, I went to a movie theater and watched Strangers on a Train on Friday.
Nice.
And that was very cool. And I started watching White Lotus. Highly recommend it.
There you go. Boom. Nailed it.
All right. Quick hitters. So let's get into What's Up, Doc. This was new for both of us.
Yeah.
As I said, 1972. It's directed and written by Peter Bogdanovich. Stars Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neill.
Not written by Peter Bogdanovich.
I thought it was written by Peter Bogdanovich.
Not written by Peter Bogdanovich.
No? No.
Written by David Newman, Robert Brenton, Buck Henry.
Oh.
Peter Bogdanovich has a writing credit, but he's not the main writer.
Oh, okay. I think I might.
I would say it's much more credited to David Newman and Buck Henry.
Okay. Is it the movie called The Great Buck Henry? Isn't there a movie called The Great Buck Henry?
Quite possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. So, yes, Barbara Streisand, who you know from probably all kinds of musical things and also movies. And Ryan O'Neill, who I knew him because I watched Barry Lyndon a few months ago. He's very different in Barry Lyndon than he is in this. In this one, he's kind of a straight-up rock scientist, both rock in terms of music and also in terms of igneous rocks.
Right.
And it is the story of four red checkered suitcases that all get mixed up and all the zany antics that happen from everybody chasing these down these suitcases.
Yep.
And it gets very slapstick. I believe this was said to be like a homage to the screwball movies of the 1940s.
Screwball rom-coms.
I've seen
your,
some.
Like your It Happened One Night or
I was thinking it's a
bring up baby.
Yeah, I was thinking it's a mad world. This reminded me a lot of that movie. That one's not as much of a rom-com, but that's like everybody chasing something and it gets very slapstick. I mean, I think that would be a pretty obvious connection to this. I'll be interested to see if that comes up. I recently watched it, so I didn't add it to my list, but
I think it's a very close cousin to some that come out in the 80s as well. I mean, you have there's the one where they're racing through Las Vegas to California, all in different cars trying.
Not Logan's Run.
And I can't remember the name of it, but
It's got Burt Reynolds in it, right?
Yeah, it's Cannonball Burt Reynolds Run. And Cannonball Run. Yeah, it's very Cannonball Run. And then there's a knockoff of that used to be on HBO all the time with the kid from Revenge of the Nerds, Robert Carradine, and I don't remember what the movie is called.
That's not Rat Race, is it?
No, because it's from the 80s. Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's in that same vein of like your Rat Race and your Clue and your, you know, mix up comedy where everybody has a different persona and nobody can quite figure out who anybody is or why they're doing anything. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a really good time watching this movie. What about you?
I really liked it. It's kind of the tale of two halves, this movie. Mm-hmm. The first half all takes place in this hotel. And the second half, we get a very extended chase scene that has lots of slapstick and lots of almost slapstick gags that happen. Right. It's like you're watching like a circus performer where, you know, they keep almost falling off the tightrope. They keep almost crashing into the glass, almost hitting the guy on the ladder, almost going into the ocean. And then you know, it's going to happen. And you just keep getting faked out. Like, oh, wasn't that time? Wasn't that time?
It reminded me a lot of the, both the Buster Keaton films we watched early on in the Criteria Collection, and then also the what was the other guy? The guy that did the one with the clock where he's hanging off the clock.
Oh, Safety First or Safety Last.
Safety Last with that it reminded me a lot of that, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, with Harold Lloyd.
That's a really good call.
Safety Last, if you've not seen it, highly recommend it. I know not everybody's into silent movies. You will forget it's a silent movie. It's so much fun.
And The Cameraman. It reminded me a lot of the Buster
Keaton. Oh, I never saw that. Okay, I didn't see The Cameraman.
Which I really, really liked.
Yeah, no, it definitely does have that silent film, Charlie Chaplin almost going off the ledge when he's on roller skates and, kind of thing. So I definitely like the second half better than the first half. And I think for me, this movie was a little bit slow and a little bit hard to track. And I still think it was a little hard to track. Until we get the big blow up in the hotel room where the room is on fire and the one guy, the government agent, goes through the window and that through the chase where we get they steal a car at the wedding and they end up getting arrested and then having the final code. I thought the final code of this movie, the last little epilogue, once they go in front of the judge when they're on the airplane, that was all really good.
Yeah.
My big issue with this movie is, like, what's up with this? Like, literally, like, what's up, Doc? Like, there were a lot of things that just didn't make sense.
I think part of it for me was I had a really hard time understanding why Barbra Streisand's character does what she does in the first place to kick off this movie. Yes. Even though I love her character, she's fantastic, you never get a actual motivation for why she targets Ryan O'Neill, because it's not like he's the rich one. The rich suitcase.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's definitely a con artist and like a grifter, and she wants to try to get his hotel room. But she doesn't really like know enough about him to con him properly is the problem. And
that's what I almost went back and watched some of this today because I was like, is there something in the beginning that I missed? Because we are introduced to her and we're seeing her like look through the window at a guy flipping a pizza. And then she's just like walking in front of traffic and not caring that she's causing all of these car accidents. And it just kind of sets you up that she is this wacky character.
You know, she's hungry because she does the grift with the. She overhears what hotel room somebody is in and tries to get the room service. Yeah. And then, once you realize it's Ryan O'Neill's room, I think that's what the deal is she's trying to keep him out of that room so she can get in. But then, I don't know. It doesn't really.
Yes. I mean, so maybe it's. And you know, there are a lot of, obviously there's a lot of coincidences in this, and this is just one of those movies where, you know, this is not a movie made for like breaking down the logic of it. It's kind of, I was on that Curb podcast last night, and a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes are like, you can't try to figure out the logic behind what happens. Yeah. You just have to go with
exactly
like the setup and the payoff on the gags is what's fun. But
it's humor of awkward circumstance. It's like the awkward situation humor.
Yeah.
And there's so many awkward situations in this. Like,
right. And the, I feel like three of the four suitcases make sense to me. So right. We have the one, the first one we see is the top secret government files.
Right.
Then we see the one with the jewels, with the precious jewels that get stolen. We see the rocks, which are of no value, but of course are heavy. So you would think that they're the jewels. And then, you know, the one that, not Eunice, but Barbara Streisand's Judy has. That is just filled with underwear.
Which is just her clothes. It's just her clothes, yeah.
It's funny, but I don't really understand, why did she even have that? Why? Like, I mean, I guess it's just like a coincidence, but all of that was just kind of confusing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's a traveling, like, she's definitely a grifter of some sort. But yeah, why she would end up with that bag. It would have made more sense if there was a scene where we saw her purchasing that exact bag after she goes to the hotel and clocks all of the bags as people are checking in. There had been a scene where we see her go
back. It's a grift, yeah.
Yeah, where we see her go buy that exact bag. Then it would sort of put all that together. But that's, like, really nitpicky. I mean, I don't care that much. But
I mean, the logic, I don't need the logic of this movie to make total sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I do agree that it... you know, just the logic of this movie. I mean, all of the logic, and I guess that kind of also goes to the other problem I had with this, which is just like the love story. I cannot believe this movie is on any list of great love stories. I mean, it's a fun, you know, it's fun to see the relationship between the two leads grow, and then you have you have Eunice Burns, which is great, and great character names in this. But you know, Eunice Burns, who is I keep wanting to call him Steve, Howard. I mean, she calls him Steve. Steve / Howard's fiance. Yeah. And she ends up with the creepy, like, Grant guy.
Hey, leave Laramie alone. He was great.
Laramie, yes, Penny. Thank you. Yeah. Oh,
he's the DA in, or not the DA, the public defender in My Cousin Vinny.
I mean, he's so just like a dead ringer for Jason Schwartzman in
movies. Yeah, actually, I kept wanting to call him Faraday in my notes instead of Larrabee.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
He is kind of Daniel Faraday looking.
Yeah.
Frederick Larrabee is his name.
Yeah, there you go.
Played by Austin Pendleton. He's one of those guys. I mean, if you look up his filmography, he's been in a ton of stuff. There is like the fun relationship aspect of Howard and Judy and them starting to meet each other. But like, even when they're up and they're in where the piano is and they kiss, it just completely comes out of nowhere.
Because he's like really pissed off and she like should be gone at that point. Like, how would she know that he would even come up there like to begin with?
Right.
Like, it doesn't really make any sense. So. Mm-hmm. It just sort of happens, you know, but sometimes the best love stories do just kind of
happen. Just happen, right.
This one I don't think is one of our best rom-coms.
No.
But I do think it's one of our best comedies we've covered.
Yeah, the com is good. The rom-com.
The comedy is good.
I like where the characters end up at the end of the movie. Sure. They're on the airline and she's sitting in the seat behind him. They're watching Looney Tunes for whatever reason. And... he says, what is that? The love is never having to say you're sorry, which is actually not from this movie. I don't know if you knew that. And I did look up what movie it was from because I was like, oh, that's a famous line. I didn't know that was
from. Yeah, I thought it was from this movie as well.
I didn't know it was from What's Up, Doc? It's actually not. It's from another movie O'Neill was in called Love Story, which is from
1970. Okay.
Yes. So he was in the 1970 adaptation of Love Story. Ryan O'Neill was in it. So there's a fun meta joke.
Is that also a Peter Bogdanovich movie?
I do not know if it's a Peter Bogdanovich movie, but it's a Ryan O'Neill and Ellen McGraw are in it.
Got it.
Yes. So, and you know, it's up there on the 100 years, 100 greatest movie quotes from AFI's Film Institute. And so it's a fun line. It is not directed by.
It's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not. No. So I think what this movie is trying to do is do a romantic comedy parody of all the rom-coms of that era.
Well, the Love Story came out 2 years before. Love Story came out in 1970.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess they just decided to make fun of themselves.
Like, right. Yeah. You know? He's just poking fun at them. I mean, it's kind of like a meta, you know, Deadpool joke, which is, right. It was very fun. I don't know if more people understand it. I'd be curious if, you know, if you have that line on the Family Feud, what percentage of the audience is saying it's from Love Story versus What's Up, Doc?
Right. Versus this. Yeah.
Yeah. If you only asked people who knew it was from one of those two movies, I guess you would have to do that.
For sure.
But I mean, I do like that, like breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think of the title of this movie?
I think I like it because they want this movie to feel like a Looney Tunes cartoon, where okay. you're just following the madcapness of the characters through the day, and then it gets wrapped up. And, you know, you even see the Looney Tunes in the end. Like,
right.
some of the screwballness of the comedy really is Looney Tunes-esque, where people's eyes are practically bopping out of their heads at points, and people are falling all over things and having pratfalls, and there are crazy, you know, Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner-esque chases through the streets of San Francisco. Yeah, I think it works. It's weird that that's the opening line from Barbara Streisand to him, because there it's very like, I just said the name of the movie, you know,
right.
It's the Leo gif. It's like, oh, she said it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that needs to be.
I mean, I would imagine Looney Tunes was more zeitgeisty back in 1972 right. than it is now. And I do like what you're saying about it feeling like a Looney Tunes cartoon, but it really, I mean, is he a doctor? Like, he might be a PhD. And so maybe it's kind of playing on that as well. I don't know what this could be called that would be better, but the title is just, I don't like the title at all.
Yeah.
It feels completely forced in. There, you could remove the two references to What's Up, Doc from this movie, and it would be the exact same movie. I do like that she's eating carrots. I always like when characters are eating carrots on screen. We see that in...
I mean, obviously, that's why she says the line. I mean,
right, because she's eating the carrots. Yeah, I know. I got that. Yeah. But like in Shoot 'Em Up, the character eats carrots. And then I feel like in another movie I just recently watched, was it It Happened One Night, I think that the one main character eats carrots a lot on screen. I always like carrots. Carrots are a fun snack. So
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, care enough, is that what you said? Yes, exactly. And I do like the scene between them when they meet outside of saying, "What's up, Doc?"
Right.
You know, that meeting in the gift shop where every time he tries to move something, she's right behind where he moves it. Right. And she tries to get him to buy the radio, which is a $70 radio. That's not worth it. Do not buy a $70 radio.
In the 70s, a $70 radio, I don't know. They didn't have a lot of portable radios like that back then, right? I mean, because the boombox era didn't come for another 10 or 15 years, so the
radio was $70 in 1972. Yep. I just pulled up an inflation calculator.
Yep.
That item would cost $457 today.
Good lord.
That's
no, thank
insane.
You.
Insane.
Yeah, I don't need a $400 boombox. Thank you, though.
It
doesn't even have a CD player.
This is, as you know, according to usinflationcalculator.com, $457 and 18 cents is what a $70 radio would cost.
That's wild.
That is Bidenflation, if I've ever heard of it myself.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
Good luck finding a Radio Shack to buy one now, though.
Really? No, you can listen to this podcast on like a $80 device. So no need to get a radio.
If that.
Yeah. All right, so you brought up before we started talking about this podcast that you were like, it would be fun to talk about like the four major big pratfalls in this movie.
The beats, yeah.
So you think that there's four main scenes. I would be curious, what are the four main scenes?
I think there are four major scenes, and I think the first one is when they meet in the gift shop.
Yep.
And then there's the dinner.
Mm-hmm. Where they're all under the table.
Hotel,
and
in the conference room. Everything.
What kind of wine are they drinking? Yes.
Yeah, everything from them getting there to having to hide under the table to Eunice trying to get in. And then there's everything from when he finds Barbra Streisand in the bathroom with the bubble bath, and then Eunice comes in and she's like, "What? Why are there bubbles?"
And then
everything breaks and everybody's out the window and the room catches on fire. Like, everything through that is the third big set piece, and I think that was my favorite. And then you have the fourth major set piece is the dinner party leading into the car chase. The ending at Larrabee's house.
Do you think that's its own set piece, though? Because that's kind of like a...
That's true.
Like
I guess there are five. There's the scene at Larrabee's house where everybody tries to get their bags back, and everything's insane. And then you have the bicycle and car chases at the
end. So why is the hotel fire conundrum catastrophe your favorite?
I think I just... This is so dumb, but it seems like one of those things that shows have continued to, like, use and rip off in every major sitcom for, like, the last 30 years.
We're just, like, one bad thing begets another bad thing.
We're another bad thing and another bad thing, and there's somebody hiding behind a curtain, and then something catches on fire, and then something breaks, and then...
Right.
You know, as somebody who wasn't supposed to be there comes or calls you on the phone, or it's that escalation to just pure chaos until it also reminded me until literally the room catches on fire. And then
it's really funny that you're talking about pure chaos, because I just had this really terrible feeling that I forgot to hit record before we started podcasting.
Oh, no.
No, I did. But I was like, oh, crap, did I ever hit record before we started? But we are recording.
Right, right.
That would have been a catastrophe.
Skype needs to have an auto-record for us, where as soon as we log on, it just starts recording.
Yeah, that would be good.
But what it really reminded me of was the community episode, where they're all hanging out at Abed's apartment, and they keep rolling the dice and getting a different scenario of what
Dungeons
happens.
Is it Dungeons & Dragons episode?
It's not Dungeons & Dragons. At Abed's apartment for a party. I think it's Abed's apartment. It might be Burrito's.
Yeah, it's the one that the famous GIF comes from, right? Where Troy is walking in with all the pizzas and
with all the pizzas and but that's not D&D. That's just like, it's the one where it's a Groundhog Day where they keep resetting every time Jeff throws the dice in the air.
And so that reminded me of a lot of comedies that we've seen. Probably, I mean, I'm sure it's not the first movie to do this sort of like, well, I mean, it's definitely not, because it's kind of playing off of those 1940s movies that have like the one bad thing leads to another bad thing leads to another, kind of Rube Goldberg-esque catastrophe heading up in the room. But I was thinking through, there is a movie that I think is a pretty good movie map to this that when I bring it up that we watched last year that had that kind of like one wrong thing leads to another wrong thing. But it also reminds me of like the Out of Towners, for example, more modern, and that movie is 20 years old, but in a lot of comedies, and I do have some comedies written down that kind of follow that same.
Right. Or there's your Seinfeld episode where Kramer gets into some hijinks and it just keeps escalating because of a misunderstanding. And, it's that.
And some are less outlandish than others. I mean, Curb Your Enthusiasm, I think, also does this, but it's a little bit. It's a little bit more like awkward and subtle than being a slapstick. I would be curious though
Of it is just due to a single misunderstanding that gets thrown out of control, like having to introduce Barbara Streisand as your wife when she's not actually your wife, and then that whole
escalation. I do really like at the dinner that scene, and what I like more than the kind of physical comedy in this is the written comedy, where there's some really clever lines and really funny lines in this movie that were coming so fast I couldn't even write them down in my notes. But I love when he gets to the dinner and Howard is stuttering, and he says you, and she says Eunice, and then Howard says how, and she goes Howard, and it was so perfectly written. I really like that gag.
I think Ryan O'Neal plays befuddled really, really well, like flustered very, very well.
Yeah, he's good as like this straight guy's just in over his head and is just trying to like, he's got this headache, and I don't think they really like made as big of a deal about him hitting his head and that being what leads to all of this, because he brings it up at the end of the movie. He said, I think it was in front of the judge where he says, I hit my head and then this happened and this happened and this happened. I didn't really even put that together until he said it to the judge that, if he hadn't hit his head in the taxi, he never would have gone down to the pharmacy to get the aspirin. Yeah. So I wish the movie would have kind of done a little bit of like the like sliding doors moment of that. Right. To go to another movie that we talked about last year. I did not like the hotel. If I had to rank the set pieces, I think the hotel room is probably my least favorite.
See, that's
fun. It was so illogical, everything that happened. And, like, at least, like, there was a, like, I don't know, the car chase was illogical, but, like, that, it was fun to watch the gags. Like, you could see the setup, you see the guy who's right. paving the cement, and then you're like, oh, they're going to drive through it. Oh, they drove over it. They drove over it, and then they drive through it on the way back.
Yeah, and there's the guy hanging the banner and the pane of the classic, you know, the classic trope of the guy, two guys carrying a pane of glass, which never happens except in movies.
Yes, exactly. Which is,
I absolutely loved.
Yeah, that was all really fun. I love how they played with tropes on that. And you're like, oh, they're going to go through the pane of glass, and then they miss it. And then the next car misses it. But I just feel like the hotel room was just kind of like, okay, here's a big loud thing we can do. It was like, oh, the knob on the TV broke off. Like, why would the knob on the TV break off? And then he tries, and it's like, just unplug the TV from the wall then. But there's not even like an outlet. It's like built in.
Yeah, he's not trying to unplug the outlet. He's trying to pull the cable out, which is
right. Insane. Which I don't know if it's like because back then TVs were so expensive that the hotel like kept the TV bolted into the wall so you couldn't just unplug it. Seems like a fire hazard, and it clearly is a fire hazard. And then like the door handle breaks off, and the people are like, I don't know. It was kind of fun to see Judy hanging off the ledge, like wrapped in a towel. That was a pretty fun gag. But in general, I think if I had to rank them, it would probably be the car chase, just because the car chase had so many fun moments. Then the dinner, then that meeting in the pharmacy, and then the hotel room.
I think the dinner was a lot of really fun wordplay as well, especially with the when you got the Kenneth Mars character as the antagonist introduced as well. Kenneth Mars of Young Frankenstein earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I thought he was really great as the rival for the Grant scholarship.
I wish it would have turned out that his accent was fake or something.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, because the accent was just like, it was an unrecognizable accent, and it made it very hard to understand what he was saying. And I wish it was just that he was playing up a fake accent to sound smart, which is definitely a trope you've seen in other movies. The one thing I did like is after the major blow up of the hotel, I love that he wakes up the next morning and there's pounding on the door and he picks up the phone. And then there's a great wordplay when he's talking to the hotel manager on the way out and he says, Mrs. Sleep is still burning. And instead of Mrs. Burns is still sleeping. Right. So, like there were lots of fun lines. I didn't really get a chance to write down a lot of the lines because it was just kind of it was going too fast. The movie was going too fast.
It really, really was. What did you think of the sort of pre-climax before the dinner party? I keep calling it a dinner party. The party at Larrabee's house where we have the homage to Casablanca.
That was fine. I pulled that clip as our outro music last week, so I had seen like part of that because I have to pull the YouTube video to get the music for that. And I just looked up when I haven't seen a movie and I don't know a song from it. I just look up "What's Up Doc" music and usually take the first. I wish I would have taken the "You're the Top" song from the beginning of this movie instead. It was fine, you know. When I saw that, you know, the little bit of it I saw last week, I was like, oh, it's gonna be I thought it was gonna be a much more romantic movie than it was. Mm-hmm. I just don't like that Howard just completely kisses her out of nowhere. It feels very forced. It's weird. It ages poorly. And I know Peter Bogdanovich, I know you've mentioned that Peter Bogdanovich has some issues, like Woody Allen-esque issues. I do not know what those are.
So not quite as bad as the Woody Allen-esque stuff, but he has some problematic behaviors that we'll get into in a little bit. It didn't bother me as much. My issue more is that, I mean, I can kind of understand how the Ryan O'Neill character falls in love with someone else because he already seems so miserable in his relationship with Eunice.
Right.
At the point which...
And that was Madeline Kahn's first role as her debut.
She's fantastic.
She was also great. Her fourth time showing up on this podcast, I believe.
So. Queen of the podcast.
Yeah, she's...
I love her.
Definitely. I don't know if anybody else is in the Four Timers Club. Maybe Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is probably in the Four Timers Club. Definitely Tom Cruise is in the Four Timers Club. But I'd be curious, anybody else come to mind that could be Four Timers? Just off the top of your head?
I think we only have two or three from Kenneth Mars. Not off the top of my head. Yeah, Tom Cruise, Matthew Vaughn. We don't have more than the one or two with Christopher Lloyd.
A couple Steve Martins.
Yeah. No Kevin Bacon.
I'm sure there's more. Catherine O'Hara, we had three times last year.
We did have the Catherine O'Hara run.
Yeah. I don't know. We need a stats boy to tell us.
Absolutely. Owen, get on it.
I don't know.
But yeah, I think that this, you know, had a really fun cast of comedic actors sort of right before they got stolen by Mel Brooks or Christopher Guest or people that were going to sort of blow up their careers.
Or just went crazy in the case of Randy Quaid.
Yeah, or just went crazy like Randy Quaid.
Yeah. We also had Emmett Walsh as well, who is just another one of those that guys. We've had some movies that he's been in this year.
He was in the episode of the X-Files I watched this week for the Blue
Cross. Oh, was he?
Post show recaps, actually. Oh. Yeah.
He was in My Best Friend's Wedding. He was one of the parents of My Best Friend's Wedding. I actually have a ton of connections written down for this for other movies that we watched this year. For a movie that I wasn't expecting a ton of connections to, and there's not that many to Inherent Vice, I don't think, there are a lot to other movies from this year. Lots of cast connections and things like that.
Well, before we start talking connections and feedback and try to move into some more things that we might have to say, let's drop the elephant in the room with...
I have a couple other good things I want to talk about.
All right, what do you got? Hit me, sorry.
The first that was fun was Ryan O'Neill's brother played the delivery guy who gets his bike stolen.
Interesting.
And I was trying to think if we have any other cases of brothers being in movies together this year. I couldn't think of any, but...
There aren't two bridges in any of the movies we've seen.
No, I don't think so. I feel like maybe Stripes might have Bill Murray have a brother that's in
Stripes. Bill Murray has a million brothers. Was one of them in Stripes? I mean, possibly as an extra. Who knows?
That was just something I was thinking about with or maybe like Boogie Nights might have a sibling in it. So I thought that was a fun thing I noticed when I was looking through the cast list today. I also noticed a lot of patterns in this, which obviously the patterns play off for the comedy. You can write a rule of threes and things like that. But we had, you know, clothing getting ripped. We had all of the almost car accidents that happened. Lots of word talk fast talk and word play. And then pills throughout this movie. Lots of characters taking pills. And then it wasn't just the suitcases, but you saw lots of incidents of red plaid. Howard wears a red plaid tie and a red plaid cummerbund.
Is that a tie or an ascot?
I thought it was like a bow tie.
He's sort of wearing it like an ascot at one point, so I thought
Could be. I like some of the jokes, like when Judy takes his glasses and he's like, I can't see, and then he puts the glasses back on, he's like, oh, I don't want to see. I think this is like a very, very cleverly written movie humor-wise,
I agree.
I just don't think necessarily like plot-wise it makes much sense, but it's not a movie you necessarily go to.
Exactly. Like I was not as concerned about the plot because I was having such a good time with the actual physical and wordplay humor.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I mean,
and fun, quirky characters too, like we mentioned, and great character names. I know, like, you know, we've been referring to them somewhat as like their actor names, which I always try to use the character names when I'm doing these movies if I can. But like Howard Bannister is Ryan O'Neill's character. Eunice Burns, like those are both really good characters.
You never hear the name Eunice anymore. Eunice is like one of those old names that has sort of gone by the wayside. Like,
well, Howard too. I feel like you don't hear a lot of Howard.
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of Howards now either. Yeah.
And, you know, we had the Frederick Larrabee, Hugh Simon, like just, I don't know, like the names in this kind of lend themselves to the jokes, right? Like Eunice obviously is one that you can play with the like UUU. So there's that.
I mean, you have your bad guys, your bumbling crooks in Fritz and Harry, who basically are Harry and Marv from Home Alone.
I didn't realize that. Some of the people who were chasing them, like the government agent and the guy trying to release the information, I didn't know what any of those characters' names were. Like Michael Murphy, another one of those that guys.
He's just Mr. Smith. Yeah, he's just Mr. Smith, the secret agent. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Smith.
Oh, and then Mr. Jones, I'm assuming, is the guy who's chasing
him. He's the other agent. And then you have, you know, then you have Fritz and Harry, who are the two guys trying to steal the gems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who get crisscrossed with which room they're supposed to be in, and the it's my dinner, no, it's not my dinner stuff.
Right. Yeah, that was fun.
That was all really fun. I think they do a really good job. And then I wish we had gotten a little more personality or wrap up with the mobsters. Like, I wish we had seen...
Yeah, that just kind of came out of nowhere.
I wish we had seen the actual scene where Eunice talks to the mob guys and is like, no, you don't want me. I'm just trying to find this place. Oh, I know where your bag is.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, so she gets them to, like, help her go to the house. Like, I wish we had seen that scene between Eunice and the mob guys.
Yeah, you know? Eunice is such a side character in this. But it is like you can see, it's weird to hear Madeline Kahn's voice coming out of somebody who's so young, because she sounds exactly the same. She has all the same intonation, but I'm just not used to her being that young as she was in this movie. And we haven't really talked too much about Barbara Streisand, but I do think she's very charming in this.
Yeah.
And I completely, because she was in A Star Is Born, which maybe will come up later. And then A Star Is Born was remade with Lady Gaga. And I completely get why they cast Lady Gaga to play Barbara Streisand, because they have a lot of similar mannerisms and kind of the like charming quirkiness that they both have.
Exactly. Yeah.
I completely get it. As I was watching her, I was like, yes, this definitely could be Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born.
I agree. And I you know, most people, including myself, know her, you know, much better as either a serious dramatic actress or her obvious lengthy music career. But it's nice to see sort of a mix of her acting chops and her voice work in a movie like this, because she gets the opening song and the closing song and a nice cover of As Time Goes By. The opening song and the closing song are both from the musical Anything Goes, which I don't know if she starred in at any point during the 60s, but she may have been in a Broadway revival of it in the 60s, which would be why they chose those. But I think she does a really good job. And obviously she's a hell of a singer.
Yeah,
but I think she handles all of the comedic stuff and charm stuff well too. I mean, I wrote down she's basically just like a really, really great con artist. Like, I mean, you can see why she's able to be such a little scammer, you know.
And it's nice that she's really the lead of this movie. We haven't had a ton of movies this year or last year that have been female-led. A lot of the movies that we've ended up picking, you know, like My Best Friend's Wedding was female-led. Dirty Dancing, female-led, just looking at kind of some of the movies. Private Benjamin, obviously. I think there's a lot of probably obvious connections between this and Private Benjamin, including that I always get Goldie Hawn and Barbara Streisand confused. I don't know why. So I did appreciate that, and I liked spending time with this character. It was nice that this movie did not belabor anything. It just kind of like, I think it belabored the beginning before we get to the dinner. I thought it took a little while to get there, but then once we get there, this movie is really kind of breezy and quick.
Well, this movie earned a total of $66 million at the box office off of a $4 million budget, which is incredible for the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hefty profit.
What's it that inflation?
I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's 200, probably something like $250 million now or something like that. But it was actually the third highest grossing film of 1972 behind The Godfather and The Poseidon Adventure. So three very different movies. Like, it's very rare that a movie like this now would be in the top three grossing films of the year. Like, it's really like interesting to see how movie tastes and movie going has changed in 30, 40 years. Like, there's no way a movie like this gets released in theaters, let alone is the third highest grossing film of the year, right?
No, I mean, comedies don't really gross that much. I mean, I'm thinking of like A Game Night but those aren't high grossing, but that was like a, you know, that's similar to this.
This movie goes straight to Netflix now.
Yeah. I did want to just look up, I was looking up the AFI 100 Years 100 Laughs list to see. Yeah. So you said this was number 61 on that list. 61 on the 100 laughs between Sherlock Jr. And Topper. And just a quick,
I don't know what either of those movies are.
Shampoo was on that list. Harold and Maude was on that list. Nice. I'm just looking at movies that we've covered that are also Groundhog Day, also on that list. We haven't done Ghostbusters, but that's on there. Anything else that we covered? Philadelphia Story, Young Frankenstein.
There you go.
MASH, number 7 on that list.
Nashville.
Yeah, Mashville, exactly. Fargo is on there, number 93, towards the bottom.
That's wild.
Yeah, so it's this list is all over the place. Beetlejuice, number 88. So we've covered a lot of movies on the 100. Private Benjamin, 82.
We've actually done a good comedy.
Yeah, we've done a lot of the comedies off of this list. I think that's all of the ones that we covered. Yep. And then looking at the 100 Year, 100 Passions, this is the love stories list. So you said, again, this is number 68 on that list. One ahead of Harold and Maude at number 69.
There you go.
Let's see. Scrolling through this one, how many movies have we done off of this? Probably a lot fewer, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Nothing is coming up yet.
Would you take this or Harold and Maude? Do you think this is very similar?
Very different than Harold and Maude. Both weird, kind of awkward. Well, Harold and Maude a little bit more of an awkward relationship than this.
Yeah.
I don't know which movie I would prefer to watch than the two of these. Do you have a preference?
I think I would watch this over Harold and Maude.
Okay. Yeah. This is a little bit more fun than Harold and Maude. Philadelphia Story is number 44 on that list of love stories, AFI list of love stories. So far, that's everything that's coming up ahead of us. This is the second highest love story that we've covered on this podcast, according to the AFI list. Witness was number 82. So
wow, that's wild.
I wouldn't have expected Witness to show up on a list.
Yeah, that's strange.
Dirty Dancing, number 93. Working Girl, 91.
There you go.
So we're hitting a couple more towards the back half of this list. So, all right. Well, we've talked about all the good. Brendan, what's the bad? Tell me about Peter Bogdanovich.
Let's talk about Peter Bogdanovich. Peter Bogdanovich has a complicated relationship with Hollywood, to say the least. I'm only going to give you the brief details here, but if people want a more comprehensive breakdown of exactly what happened with Peter Bogdanovich and his career, I highly recommend they check out the You Must Remember This season on producer and production designer Polly Platt that came out earlier this year. Peter Bogdanovich actually came out and did a podcast of his own trying to cross-program against the You Must Remember This to tell his side of the story. I didn't bother listening. Much prefer to listen to Karina Longworth, who is very good at what she does, and so is her podcast. But
yeah,
basically,
we talk about that podcast a lot.
Yeah, basically during the production of Last Picture Show, a couple of years prior to this film, Peter Bogdanovich had first a private and then a public affair with 21-year-old actress Sybil Shepherd. While he was married to and had two children with his production designer and producing partner, Polly Platt. It was a very public affair and a very messy divorce. And basically Bogdanovich cut himself out of his children's lives for large parts of it and tried to destroy his wife and soon to be ex-wife's career while continuing numerous affairs, before they were even divorced, including discrediting all of her work that she did on his films while they were still married. She basically maintains that she was pretty much an assistant director on all of his films and also deserved writing credits. He disputes this fact, and most of his films where she's the production designer, she is only credited as the production designer when she probably should have been credited as a assistant director, executive producer, and co-writer. And so there's a lot of unfortunate, basically, pushing down of Polly Platt and her career at the expense of lifting up Peter Bogdanovich. And it's really unfortunate. Luckily, with the release of the You Must Remember This podcast, Polly Platt has started to be celebrated again as the brilliant contributor and artist that she was. Because also she did a lot of great work on films after her divorce from Peter Bogdanovich, including work with Cameron Crowe on Say Anything and what was the other movie I was going to mention? Say Anything. And then also with she did work on Bad News Bears, the Walter Matthau version. She did work on, there was a
producer. Yeah, it'll come to you.
Yeah, sorry. She was the primary producer on Bottle Rocket. She
The Wes Anderson movie Bottle Rocket.
Yes, she was one of the primary investors and champions for Wes Anderson's first film. She was also a producer on Broadcast News, and that's when she won her only shared Oscar accolade, was producing Broadcast News. But yeah, she's basically doesn't get the credit that she deserves for this film and for the other films she did alongside Peter Bogdanovich. And that is the story, briefly, of Peter Bogdanovich being a philanderer and ruining his ex-wife's career, or trying to. So, the end. Definitely go, if you want to know more, I'm sure that I probably didn't do the story quite the justice that it deserved.
So is the whole season of You Must Remember This about Peter Bogdanovich, or just an episode?
It's the whole season. It's about Polly Platt and her career.
Okay. Yeah. And so each season is about a different person? Is that how that
podcast It's usually about a different story from classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
Each season.
So this picture of Peter Bogdanovich I'm looking at, I know he acted in some movies. He looks super familiar to me, and I cannot figure out why. Okay. And I looked at movies he's in. He's only been in a couple movies. So he must have, maybe he was on a TV show or something.
There was probably a cameo in something that he did.
Because this picture of him looks like insanely. So I'm going to pull up his IMDb and see. I mean, it's not one of the movies he did. I've only seen three of his movies, including While We Were Young, Last Picture Show,
and F is for Fate.
In terms of movies he was actually like starred in, not movies he made. Scrolling through, so he was in an episode of How I Met Your Mother.
40 movies.
Oh, this is it. Sopranos.
Oh,
he plays Dr. Elliot Kupferberg, which I believe is Dr. Melfi's psychologist.
Yeah, Melfi's psychologist. That makes
sense. That's what it is. Okay, that makes more sense. So,
got it. There you go.
Interesting, because the episode of Curb that I did had somebody who was in that I did with Sopranos. Alvin Chester last night had somebody who was in Sopranos also. So, nice Sopranos connection.
There you go. So yeah, should we get on to some positive feedback from this?
Yeah, movie? Let's get into some hopefully positive feedback. Last Picture Show was 1971, so the year before this movie. So this was all going on while this movie was being made.
Yep. So. Exactly.
All right. Well, let's see what we got feedback-wise. As always, we start things off with Jeff. And Jeff, I don't think has been a fan the last few movies. I know he didn't like Inherent Vice. Mm-hmm. I think he did. I don't remember Long Goodbye if he liked that, but I know he didn't like Inherent Vice.
He was pretty low on it. Yeah.
This week, he said, this is a pretty solid comedy. Not a lot of laugh-out-loud moments, but it was funny and a bit silly. Loved the casting and thought Ryan O'Neal and Barbara Streisand were both very good. The supporting actors were excellent as well. Of course, I liked Madeline Kahn, even though she plays a part very similar to her role in Young Frankenstein. About midway through, I thought I knew where all the cases were, and then all hell broke loose. Quite a few standard comedic bits. They did well, especially the guys carrying the window and the unusually long distance right by a guy high up on a ladder who will get knocked down. All in all, good and fun movie. 4 stars.
There you go. Nice. That's a good 4 stars from Jeff.
One thing that Jeff brings up that I was thinking at the beginning of this, when I was watching the movie last night, I was thinking that we could talk about was like, it is so hard to track who has what case.
I didn't even bother trying.
I was like, I was going to hope to be like, okay, so this case goes here. And I immediately had no idea. I didn't even know what was in each case. And I still, again, do not understand Judy's case. I guess it's just happened to be the same. It was just by circumstance that all these people are on the same floor and all have similar cases. So.
I did really like when Ryan O'Neal at the end says, Judy, Judy, Judy. Just like the attendant trying to do the Cary Grant impression in Long Goodbye.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
When he's trying to go through the turnstile. Yeah, that brought a smile to my face. It wasn't like that loud funny. But
not like
connection.
Hey Jude. All right, well, you got a nice long one from Olin.
All right, Olin says, I'm often pitched as the anti-Av guy for film reviews, but feel quite a diversion between me and Zach lately in relation to comedy films. So interested to hear his feedback. As for my own thoughts, obviously this being so strongly influenced based on the framework of Howard Hawks' classic Bringing Up Baby, was hard to not compare O'Neill and Streisand are strong central leads, but can't compare with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn. However, the supporting cast is magnificent. Madeline Kahn nails it in her film debut, while her young Frankenstein co-worker Kenneth Mars always cracks me up with his excited European-accented manic routines. Plenty of slapstick and farce, which was excellently placed and perfectly timed motions and sound effects, compares well against any top silent film comedy or Looney Tunes. The film does separate itself significantly from Bringing Up Baby to not be a pure remake. Minor quibbles, there were no real lines that stuck out to me, and at times the mixing up of the bags in the middle segment was getting a little tiresome. Still fun, energetic, and a good time had. Also 4 out of 5. And Zach, that is it for feedback this week.
Oh man, we only two for
only
this.
Only two people wrote in. I know. Oh. Little known comedy, little known feedback.
Yeah. I mean, this was a harder one to see, so I appreciate Olin and Jeff
looking
us up. Hopefully, I mean, most of you probably are not listening if you've not watched the movie, but hopefully you check it out because I think we had fun with it. Maybe we'll try to sell it a little bit more in our comments.
Absolutely.
So Sean Baker, he's a director. He directed The Florida Project. I follow him on Letterboxd for whatever reason. I think he has some kind of obnoxious reviews, but I'll grab his Letterboxd review just to add some more feedback. Okay. He said, another reminder that Polly Platt was an incredible production designer. Not my cup of tea, however. At least it introduced the world to Madeline Kahn.
There you go. Boom.
So, yes, we are pulling back to Polly Platt. I think, you know, the fact this movie, you have to pay to rent it. I don't know how many people it's high on their list. But I think people would like it. And I think, you know, get it from the library.
I think it's well worth $1.99 for the 94 minutes.
Definitely worth the $1.99. It was it was very fun to watch this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I guess I will start with my feedback. Do I go first?
Yeah.
I do. All right. So I'm with the listeners, actually. I don't know if I'll go 4. I don't think I'd go 4. I think I'd go 3.5. I really liked this movie. It was a lot of fun. There's just the logic was not at all there. But I agree with most of what Olin said, except when he said there weren't lines that stuck with him. I think the problem I had with it was there were too many lines. They were all like, there was very fun wordplay. It's very well written. The title made no sense, and I'm annoyed by the title because I think more people would see this movie. It was not called What's Up, Doc. Unless it's like about a doctor, I just don't think it doesn't at all tell you what this movie is. So, yeah, I don't like the title. I've never seen Bringing Up Baby, so I can't compare it to that, but I can compare it. I think it's Mad, 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 Mad World, which maybe will come up later. Definitely could be one.
I think it also really reminded me a lot of, you know, one we hit on earlier, too, in It Happened One Night, which you and I both watched this year. I thought.
Yeah, recently watched it this year. So, overall, I thought it was very fun. Glad we picked it. It's a little bit different than things that we've done lately, which I appreciate. Absolutely. Although I do think it had tons of connections, and, you know, even maybe we'll find some connections to Inherent Vice.
Yeah, I think I'm right there along between you and the listeners. I mean, a four seems about right, but I think personally I'm closer to like a solid comedy 3.5. I think it's really, really well done. I liked a lot of the comedic bits. I liked a lot of the long takes of the different jokes that it set up and then paid off within the frame of one long scene. I really liked a lot of the dialogue. I thought the lead performances and the supporting performances were all solid. I think I would probably watch it again, you know, if like somebody said, hey, I want a breezy comedy.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Like if you have some people over to drink or something and you throw this movie on, maybe you could watch it and try to track the bags. It could be fun.
Yeah, could try to track the bags. But I think I'm there with you. Like, I want to give it a 4, but I think it is closer to a 3.5. And so I'm going to land at a 3.5 as well. And that is going to average us to.
It's
got
to be 3.75,
right? 3.66.
3.6. Oh, just below the cutoff. So it's running down to 3.5.
Yeah. So it's going to round down to a 3.5.
All right. Well, let's get into some connections. So obviously that phrase, "What's up, Doc," was the reason why we picked this. I think for title connection, we just put in the parentheses, "What's up, Doc," unless you have a better title connection than that.
That's fine by me.
Yeah. And the only other stuff I really wrote down from the last movie was just like quirky characters. Yep. And Twisty Mystery. In the last movie, we had three missing people that we were trying to track, and this one we have four missing bags that we're trying to track. So multiple.
And we had
tracking.
We had climactic scenes by the seaside.
Oh, true. LA, yeah, the California seaside. Yeah, that's
California
good.
Yep. Seaside.
One thing I didn't mention, I think this movie uses San Francisco and the hills really, really well. Absolutely. Because the hills play into yep. all of the stuff during the
all
chase.
Of the chase stuff. Yeah.
It's great. And having yep. run up and down those hills before, those hills are no joke in San Francisco.
Having never seen the Steve McQueen movie that it's parodying in Bullet, I still recognize the, like, car chase homage.
Yeah, it's kind of that iconic.
It's that iconic, like, you know, two-door sedan careening through the streets of San Francisco. Like, mm-hmm. that was just such a clear homage to that movie. I really liked that, even though I've never seen the movie.
Yeah.
As far as connections to stuff we've done, obviously we talked about the Young Frankenstein connection.
Who was Kenneth Mars in Young Frankenstein?
Young Frankenstein, he's the inspector.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
The inspector.
Yeah, it's very similar characters.
The mustache and the cap. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Madeline Conning and Kenneth Mars both in Young Frankenstein. Lots of cast connections.
Plenty of them.
So we also had Michael Murphy, who played the guy trying to expose the government conspiracy, Mr. Jones, the other one, Mr. whatever.
Smith.
Yep. Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. He was in both MASH and Magnolia.
Yep.
Let's see what else we had. I had another Emmett Walsh was in My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yep.
Also, the judge was in Young Frankenstein. And I think cast wise, that's all I have. But I have a bunch of other stuff. Oh, Randy Quaid was, which we didn't really talk about him, but looks way different because he's so young. He was in Brokeback Mountain.
Well, he's also barely in the movie. I mean, it's sort of like a blink and you miss it cameo from him. At the beginning, in fact, there's one point where I thought it was Randy Quaid, and it's actually Kenneth Mars when they're sitting at the table. So yeah, I mean, it's like they both. The problem is they both have like a similar build and hairstyle, so it's
But I mean, Randy Quaid very young in this movie.
Yeah, very looks very young.
Completely different. And then kind of for a like overstretched cast connection. So we watched Meet the Parents earlier this year.
Yep.
And in the Meet the Parents sequel, Barbara Streisand plays Greg's mom.
Exactly.
So
yep.
she is not actually in Meet the Parents, but I mean, she's
it's close enough. Kind of she's talked about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She is talked about. There you go.
I have a bunch more, but what else do you have?
Go for it. Hit me.
All right. So we had weddings, which we haven't had weddings in a while. But we had obviously they steal a car from the wedding. We have Howard's fiance is Burns, is Eunice Burns. Speaking of Burns, the last name Burns was Meet the Parents. We had Jack Burns in Meet the Parents. Yep.
Good job.
I was like, I looked up Jack Burns because like I know that name Jack Burns is familiar. Where do I know that name from? And I found Meet the Parents. Tracking a complicated journey of an object. I cannot tell you which movie this was, but I feel like there's a movie where we were trying to track. Was it The Big Sleep or we're trying to track like a bag or something? But I feel like that's happened sometime on this podcast recently.
Mm-hmm.
We have the line, I'll give you a broken back. Of course, that is...
Crash Attack Your Hidden Dragon, there's the whole thing with the stolen jade or the whatever. Sword,
Did that movie start with Once Upon a Time? Did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? Or wasn't there a movie that started with Once Upon a Time? Because this one did. I mean, obviously Once Upon a Time in Hollywood last year. But I feel like we had another movie that started with a Once Upon a Time. The Court of Law reminded me of like a scene in Life of Brian with the Caesar's Court.
Right, yeah, everybody yelling, yeah.
Yeah, everybody yelling and people misunderstanding. Just kind of that wordplay was similar to what we got in Monty Python. It's that same kind of humor. The judge ended up being Judy's dad at the end of the movie, so we have our daddy issues coming out at the last moment. So, and then a very fun one to some recent movies. So Barbara Streisand from 1963 to 1971 was married to Elliot Gould.
There you go.
Boom. From 1998 until present, she's married to James Brolin, father of Josh Brolin.
Hey, so, that connects you to Inherent Vice. So there you go.
That's true. Yeah, there's Inherent Vice. Yep. So, and that is all of my connections. Do you have any other connections on your
end? Nice. Not any that I wrote down that we didn't already cover.
And all the other movies that it shares on those AFI lists as well.
Yeah, obviously.
Earlier.
All of those. A broken and screwed up engagement with My Best Friend's Wedding and this one. A mix up of what somebody's name is. Happens in Philadelphia Story.
That's a good one. Private Benjamin. Also, that was the other one I didn't write down. But just they kind of like female-led movie from around this time period. That's a comedy. Lots of pratfalls. Mm-hmm. Like just in general, kind of shares a lot of DNA with Private Benjamin.
Sure.
Any other hotels that we've covered that we've had?
Crazy hotels, not that I can think of.
I guess not really looking at our list of movies. So
Crazy Expectations, not really. Would you consider Dirty Dancing a hotel, or is that just
a resort? It's a resort.
Okay.
Dirty Dancing is great. I don't know. Like looking back, that's a movie that's aged even better for me. That like as I think back to Dirty Dancing, I really enjoyed it. So I don't know if Megan the librarian will ever hear that comment because she didn't watch the movie yet. But hopefully she's gonna watch. Hopefully she'll watch What's Up Doc sometime soon. So
too.
All right, what's your movie map?
All right, so for me, it's a toss up between a couple. The big one that sticks out to me because of all of the pratfalls and miscommunication about what somebody's name is and trying to figure out who someone really is and the million lines a minute pace, it's Clue.
Clue, okay.
It reminds me a lot. It reminded me a lot of Clue. And, you know, I mean, Madeleine Kahn is in both, which is great. Right. But it really reminded me of Clue as far as, like, the pace and the mystery and the, you know, awkward conversations that happen between all the characters. And then also My Cousin Vinny.
Okay, I didn't have My Cousin Vinny written down, but I can
I had My that. Cousin Vinny because it's also a fish out of water that also ends in a trial. And we also have the cast connection with Laramie. Yeah. So, yeah, it really reminded me a lot of My Cousin Vinny. So
I thought of Clue when I was watching this, but I'm going to go with the movie that we watched one before Clue, and that was Mixed Nuts. It had, again, that same, like, pratfalls where, like, one thing begets another. I think we even had some – we had ladders getting knocked over in that movie, I believe. We had Madeleine Kahn, obviously. And we had lots of zany characters that all end up in the same place at the end of the movie, right by the sea, actually, LAC. So I think it's very similar to Mixed Nuts. So a movie I adore. But
a movie that I have tried to forget.
All right. Well, that is What's Up, Doc? See, I'm even forgetting the name of the movie. Total of 3.5 between us and our few dedicated listeners who watched it. Hopefully more people watch it because it's a fun movie. It's, you know, it's like a high 3.5. So, and our title connection, of course, is What's Up, Doc, as you have written in our What's Up, Doc.
I would put Doc in quotation marks because both
Doc. But we have the line. I mean, I feel like the whole line, What's Up, Doc, should be in quotation marks because the line is in it. I
think it matters, but sure.
I can't put quotation marks in a file name, but I can put it in the podcast. I can put it in the podcast title, just not the actual audio file. All right. Well, hopefully we have more people who run in some suggestions. It does look like we did. Let's talk about our ladder rungs. These are our listener suggestions that get sent in every week. And then our host suggestions. From all these suggestions, we will narrow down to a final four. And then you and I will pick what movie we're going to be watching next week. A note on next week, we probably will be recording on our normal day. Brendan's going to the beach, speaking being by the sea. And I'm going to be going to DC, so we're going to try to record early on Tuesday, probably, maybe Monday night, maybe over the weekend, but probably not over the weekend. So I would say if you're going to watch along, whatever movie we pick, we're going to try to pick one that's easily streamable, and maybe one that people have seen already, so you don't have to necessarily watch it. But if you're watching along with us, I would say try to watch it earlier in the week if you can. Most likely we'll be recording on Tuesday, but we may record after. And then we're both going to be in DC, so there's a chance whatever movie we pick next week, we try to record in person, like watch the movie in person and record together maybe next weekend. That could be kind of fun. Don't know if that'll work out or not, but we are leaving the option open to maybe do that. So just throwing it out there for schedule things. I know our schedule's a little up in the air, but we never miss a week. So we're not going to miss a week. It just we might be recording early or late. So. Sending your feedback is ASAP.
Yep. We know everybody is getting busy because it's the end of the summer, planning your
football season is starting.
Football season, fantasy football drafts, trying to plan your final family vacations before the kids go back to school. But don't forget about us. Keep writing in, keep sending your feedback. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll be here. So, we'll be here. All right. Well, we got first Jeff sent in Love Story. Uses the quote, love never means. Means never having to say you're sorry, which was made fun of at the end of the movie. Also, has Ryan O'Neal in it. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Next is the main event. Both Streisand and Ryan O'Neal in it, as well as another Ryan O'Neal connection, A Bridge Too Far. I believe A Bridge Too Far has been brought up a couple times.
It did, yeah. It came up with Fitzcarraldo, I believe, is what I suggested it from there.
Yeah. So Megan the Librarian, so she has not yet watched the movie, but she says she does not think she's going to get to it this weekend, so she has no review. But she is writing to suggest the 76 version of A Star Is Born next week.
Yeah.
She says she suggested two of the other versions of it recently, so it seemed like the thing to do. And if not, you could also go with the Barbara comedy Barbara Weeper and do The Way We Were.
Which is apparently supposed to be like one of the saddest movies ever.
Oh, that sounds very uplifting.
Great. Yeah.
All right. Olin, his obvious Mount Rushmore connection, in the anticipation of somebody else nominating it. Nobody else nominated it. He has Blazing Saddles, the 1970s chaotic comedy of misunderstandings, Purposeful Deceit, with Liam Dunn, John Hillerman, and of course Madeline Kahn. So we get Madeline Kahn again. Yep. Next is 1978 Grand Slam, a film least likely to ever be picked, but a childhood favorite. I'm putting it on the long list anyways. Welsh BBC one-hour TV comedy film about touring rugby fans to France, plenty of booze, strippers, prisons, and a quite progressive portrayal, if still stereotypical, of a homosexual character for the era. Link, a man running up a downward escalator. That is a good trope, the running up a downward escalator. I'm sure that's probably happened at some point for us. Next, from 1928, Speedy. Given the huge influence, I had to choose a silent comedy and had plumbed for this Harold Lloyd film that, like What's Up Doc, has a series of chaotic city chase scenes. Also stars Babe Ruth with a cameo from Lou Gehrig.
Wow, talking softball.
Yeah.
All
right, and then we only have the three people, so see What's Up Doc, people. It's a quick
watch. See What's Up Doc. That means that I have no qualms about nominating five films this week, and I don't think you should either.
I was worried I was not going to have very many films. I have 10, 11, 12. I have 13 movies, 14 movies, none of which have been suggested.
Yep.
I'm not going to suggest all 14. So do you get to go first this week?
You get to go first this week. I already flipped it on the document.
All right.
I've been doing that every week where I flip it.
All right. I was hoping you'd take some of mine. Let's see. What should I do? All right. The first is like the most obvious connection. And that is Paper Moon.
Yes.
It has almost the same cast as Peter Bogdanovich. It came out the year after this. I mean, it's basically like what we did with Magnolia to Boogie Nights. So
yeah, for sure.
Let's see. What else should I do? I wrote down all these movies, and I don't know which one I really feel like watching. I'm just going to go Burn After Reading. Top Secret, Chase for a Top Secret Document, very funny movie. I don't think there's a ton of other connections that stand out, but I'm going to DC. It'd be fun to watch a movie that takes place in DC, and I love Burn After Reading.
Haven't revisited it in a long time. I would love to revisit it.
It's always low on the Coen Brothers list for people, but I think it's a ton of fun. And it's got a fantastic Brad Pitt performance, George Clooney. I don't know. I think that would be a good one to do. Let's see. I'm going to go Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I really don't know much about this movie. I know it's like one of the top comedies of all time. I've never seen it. And, What's Up, Doc? Who's Afraid? Yeah. So we have a question.
I had it on my short list for that exact same reason.
Nice. So this is another one. I don't think it's very easy to find. So actually, I'll leave it. It's not easy to find. So I'm going to leave it off of my list. I will go Raising Arizona as well. Emmett Walsh is in that again. Crazy characters. I think there's like a chase probably for the baby. Raising Arizona I haven't seen in probably 20 years, and so I've been wanting to revisit it. And then I'll just do the other obvious one. I won't do Bringing Up Baby because it's probably on your list. I'll do The Lady Eve, which actually was the AFI movie of the day today in the emails that they send. And it sounds like that kind of slapstick comedy. It's about a con woman as well. So I thought that could be a fun one to do.
Yep.
And I have a whole bunch of also after we leave. All right, Brandon.
So I have a few obvious ones, and none of them are Bringing Up Baby. My first obvious one, we could continue What's Up, Doc, and go with The Shining, because Doc is what's his freaking name?
Yeah, the boy.
Danny gets called.
Yeah, Danny Torrance. Yeah.
Danny Torrance gets called by his parents and by the groundskeeper in The Shining.
Yeah, it's almost spooky season, too.
You know, it's almost spooky season. And then I also thought of obvious connection is obvious, Casablanca. I mean, we have the whole homage with the You Must Remember This piano scene. Mm-hmm. Another one where...
Wait, is that why the podcast is called You Must Remember This?
Yes.
Because of that scene from this movie?
Well, yeah, she uses that song as the intro song for the
show.
Yeah.
Cool, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's really cool. Another Barbara Streisand where she gets to use her musical theater chops throughout the movie. Hello, Dolly from the 1960s. What else did I want to go with? I also thought about comedies of error centered around hotel rooms or hotel suites. And so I thought of Grand Budapest Hotel. And then,
yep. I had that on my list as well. I just didn't know if there was enough there for connection, but I Grand Budapest Hotel, very fun. And we do have the what was her name? Polly Platt connection, because she did Bottle Rocket, one of the producers on Bottle Rocket, and obviously that's Wes Anderson. So.
And then speaking of Barbara Streisand being a funny girl, I'll throw in Funny Girl.
The first movie that my brother's podcast covered this year, actually.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
okay.
But, I mean, we could do a, you know.
So those are my five. Also, Rams included Space Jam for obvious reasons.
Yeah, okay, yep. The new Space Jam or the original Space Jam?
The original Space Jam. Yeah. I also thought about another character named Doc in Doc Holliday going with Tombstone, but you know, recently watched Tombstone.
I can't believe neither of us had Back to the Future after we talked about Back to the Future so much last week. And there was another connection to Back to the Future I noticed in this movie. I mean, the hanging off the ledge of the building as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think there was one other. Oh, calling somebody by the wrong name. Why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Yeah,
could have been, good like, point. She keeps calling me Steve.
Yep.
So, but
I thought about Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp as well. Those were on my also rants.
Because of the like San Francisco chase.
As far as hotel movies that were on my also rants that didn't make it, Four Rooms, The Grand Hotel, Hotel Artemis, Hotel Rwanda.
Oh, God. If we went from this movie to Hotel Rwanda, that would be some serious whiplash.
That's why it was an honorable mention and not this. I was just thinking about hotel movies. And then Paper Moon was also on my also rants. So.
Nice. I have The Jerk in terms of slapstick starring Emmett Walsh, or at least that he's in. Randy Quaid connecting to another slapstick movie that I really like. It's super low on the popularity list on Letterboxd. Yeah. Hard to find streaming. This is the one I was going to suggest, and I didn't. That's Moving with Richard Pryor. I really like Moving. I think it's a lot of fun, but I just didn't know if it'd be easy to find. A screwball comedy with somebody calling someone Steve when it isn't their name. I've had Multiplicity on my list for that. Why would you make a clone of a clone?
There you go.
I had The Producers because Kenneth Mars is in that. And I thought it would be funny after I was just on the Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good podcast. Then do The Producers, and they are required to come on for our episode when we do The Producers because they did a whole season about The Producers a few years ago. Or a few months ago. It wasn't a few years ago. I had fun with Dick and Jane, a chase comedy. This is from the 1970s. I've never seen it. I'd only heard of the remake. It did. And I'd only heard of the remake. My brother said the original is super fun, though. I had Hot Rock, which is another movie that's on the AFI 100 Laughs list. It's a diamond heist comedy. And then Cannonball Run, which I added when we were talking about it earlier. And Bringing Up Baby, which I still feel like we probably screwed up not putting that on the list. But that's okay. All right. Well, not that many movies to choose from this week. Brendan, why don't you start with the top?
All right. So we got Love Story, The Main Event, A Bridge Too Far, A Star Is Born, The Way We Were, Blazing Saddles, Grand Slam, Speedy, Paper Moon, Burn After Reading, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Raising Arizona, The Lady Eve, The Shining, We Don't Want to Get Sued, Casablanca, Hello Dolly, Grand Budapest Hotel, and Funny Girl. I get to go first.
You do.
And I'm going to throw it out there. I've actually never seen the Barbara Streisand version of A Star Is Born.
Ah, nice.
That's what I'm going to pick. I think it would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, she sings in it. you know, she's singing in this. I think it's a natural connection.
Right.
To go with another Barbra Streisand singing performance that isn't necessarily a musical.
Yeah. Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson in that movie as well. Nice. I've only seen the most recent version of this movie. So, all right. I'll take a listener pick as well. I'm going to go with Speedy. I'm assuming it's probably a very quick watch. Probably it's streaming on Criterion. Yeah. We haven't done a silent movie on this podcast.
We haven't.
We've done a lot of silent movies this year on the Criterion Challenge. So, why not try Speedy?
Off of your list, I before I pick it, I'm curious to know if Paper Moon is streaming. If it's not streaming, I'm going to pick Burn After Reading. If it's streaming, I'll pick Paper Moon.
It is streaming. It's on Amazon Prime and on Canopy as well.
All right, and then I'm going to take Paper Moon off of your list because that is the natural connection for Bogdanovich, for Ryan O'Neill.
On the watch list of you, on the watch list of Veggie Dog, watch list of Olin. So. Yep.
And we don't have to relitigate the Bogdanovich thing again. We could just,
I mean, it really is the strongest connection. It's like we did with Magnolia to Boogie Nights. It's like the strongest Avenger. For yours, it's too early in the year to do The Shining, but I love The Shining. I think we'll get to it at some point. Casablanca, I don't know. I mean, I'm not feeling Casablanca.
Fair.
I'm going to go Grand Budapest Hotel because it was on my list. No offense, I don't really like any of your suggestions. I think Funny Girl would be good too. But it's my brother already did that on his podcast, and I don't know. So
it's pronounced Budapest.
Budapest, yes, that's what I've learned. So, in my eyes, we're down between A Star Is Born and Paper Moon.
I think so too.
I mean, Speedy could be fun. Speedy's on Criterion Channel and HBO Max. Only one person has seen it on this list, and that is Megan the Librarian. I just don't know. Is there enough connective tissue there? I mean, I guess it's kind of like.
I think the question is, do we want to follow Barbra Streisand or Ryan O'Neill?
Well, Barbra Streisand is in. Oh no, she's not. Madeline Kahn is in Paper Moon. And that's on Amazon Prime and Canopy.
Yep.
And Star Is Born is on HBO Max. So, I think Paper Moon might be a little bit more. Well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it's fun. I think it's listed as a comedy, drama, and crime. Star Is Born, I think, is just going to be a romance and drama.
I mean, we know the basic tenet of A Star Is Born. So the question is, do you want to watch that with Kris Kristofferson instead of Bradley Cooper? Probably a really good movie. I mean, but
well,
I think
that's 2.8 stars on Letterboxd.
Oh, really?
Star Is Born, 4.2 stars for Paper Moon.
I think Paper Moon is the most natural connection, and it makes the most sense for our podcast.
Paper Moon is probably also on that AFI list.
And it also crosses off another 70s for the Film Spotting shortlist.
It's another movie that nobody's going to watch, so we're not going to have a ton of feedback next
also
week.
Also good, yeah. So less recording time next week.
Yeah. All right, we're going to do Paper Moon. It claims it's on Prime and on Canopy if you have a library subscription. It's also rentable. Yeah, it's from 1973, 1 year after What's Up, Doc. Has a lot of cast connections, a lot of crew connections, and it's about a con woman as well, according to the little description. Eleanor Bogart is in this movie. I'm imagining that's Humphrey Bogart's daughter.
Interesting.
I don't know. Only in one movie. So we will have all of those tips for next week.
Ryan O'Neill and his daughter Tatum O'Neill.
We're basically going to have the same. We just run back almost the same list of suggestions next week, probably.
Randy Quaid in a small performance.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, we're doing Paper Moon.
Excellent.
We'll see. What do you think we're going to like better, Paper Moon or What's Up, Doc?
I don't want to make that prediction. I think we'll probably end up liking Paper Moon more.
Interesting.
But we'll remember the last better with What's Up, Doc.
Yes. All right.
But I think Paper Moon is probably the stronger movie.
Cool. Strongest movie it is. All right. Paper Moon coming up next week. Brendan, before we depart, I know you're going to be going on vacation soon, as am I, although I'm going to be coming to where you are. You're going to be leaving. But I'm sure there's stuff you're going to watch. What are you planning to watch this week?
I have my tickets booked to go see Shang-Chi Friday night at Atlantic Plumbing. I'm really excited for that. I was the only ticket sold so far, but I know it's really early in the week. But I was able to pick my pick of the litter among socially distanced seating at Atlantic Plumbing. So that was exciting. What else? Not too much else. I'm not sure what I'm going to have time for the rest of the weekend, but I'm sure I'll try to squeeze in a couple more movies before our next record. Yeah. But I'm really excited for Shang-Chi. I think it's going to be really great.
I thought you were going to say you're really excited for Paper Moon. But yeah. I'm also probably going to see Shang-Chi. I got a bunch of time off from work coming. I got a whole week and change coming up off of work. That's going to be nice. So I might go to a daytime showing of Shang-Chi. Gonna probably finish White Lotus, maybe even tonight. Mm-hmm. Gotta watch Stalker. So lots of very different types of movies coming up. It's also India Week on the Criterion Challenge. Yep. So I think we're both watching Monsoon Wedding.
Yeah. Getting ready for that big Jurton wedding.
Getting ready for the big wedding next week. Yeah.
Yeah, so, man. I'm excited to see you in a little over a week's time here in person. So.
Yeah, not through a screen. It'll be nice.
Yeah, not through a screen. Wild. I don't remember when the last time we hung out was. It's been a while.
Rob's wedding, I would imagine, which was almost
2 years
ago.
2019.
Yeah. I think that was the last time I took a flight. That was the last time.
Yeah.
I did a lot of things. I'm gonna be getting off plane for the first time in 2 years. It's
welcome back to the land of the
back to the swamp. Yeah, I'm back to the swamp this week. So excited to do that, and. I also just hope that everybody is safe. There's a lot of terrible shit going on right now, I feel like, between New Orleans and the fires in Lake Tahoe and
hurricanes.
Delta, don't forget about that. I don't know. That's one thing I appreciate with What's Up Doc. It was very fun to just get into this innocent and fun world. There's a lot of car events that are bringing me down right now.
Yeah, we actually got several notices from Mayor Bowser and DC alert systems of expect massive flooding all day Wednesday going into Thursday from the remnants of the freaking storm that just hit Louisiana. So I hope everyone in the South and Southeast is staying safe from hurricane season. Hunker down and think happy thoughts.
So that was a real downer way to end this podcast, but that's how it is. Anyways, Brendan, you were on a podcast last week, as was I.
I was on a podcast last week. What podcast was I on?
You were on the Rob's a Podcast Patreon episode.
Didn't even count that as a podcast.
Well, I've got a lot of good episodes. It's behind the paywall, but
It's behind the RHAP paywall. Had a lot of good feedback for that.
Survivor Micronesia.
It was on the Survivor Micronesia Fans vs. Favorites feedback show on RHAP. Rob had never heard the story about James and Alexis breaking into the production tent and supposedly stealing food during that season. So when I got to break that news to him, I got a really fun reaction from Rob that I hope. So I hope people will check that out and listen.
I am super far behind in that series, but I will listen to it in October probably.
Yeah, and I just before we started recording. Finished up listening to you on the Pretty Good Pod this week.
Pretty Good Pod. There's three
I never say I never give it enough pretties.
PPPG podcast.
Yeah, I was annoyed because I never say enough pretties. Yeah. But I really enjoyed that episode. Just finished listening. It was a really fun episode to watch this week too. Surprisingly, for as down as people seem to be on the episode, I thought it was really great.
It's weird. So every week on that podcast, when they go through the episode, they always talk about where it is on the Vulture rankings and the Ringer ranking of all the Curb episodes. And it was very low towards the bottom. Av and I both really liked the episode, as did Olin. And it was, it's a fun episode to watch. It's the Car Periscope episode, if you want to check it out. And then we talked for nearly 3 hours last night. I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning podcasting with Chester and Av about a 30-minute episode. Of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but there was tons of banter on there, lots of good stories. So it's pretty good podcast. It is our sister podcast. It was basically their way of Chester called it the home and home with this podcast, where they both came on this podcast, and then I went on there. It was a good time, and hopefully more podcasts coming up in the future. I have another some stuff thinking about with For Your Ears Only to do before some movies come out this fall, and maybe some other stuff with James Bond and whatnot. So. Stay tuned. It'll be on the social media and all that.
And next week will be our 88th episode. We'll need to give a score update. We haven't done that in a while.
Man, it's our 88th episode next week?
It's our 88th. 88 miles per hour.
I'm feeling like we should have picked Back to the Future. We definitely fucked up.
Oh, man.
No, that's all right. We're going to do Paper Moon, which will be a blind spot for both of us, a bunch of our listeners as well. So Paper Moon streaming on Amazon Prime and Canopy.
You're never going to let me live it down, though. That's the thing.
What?
That we didn't pick Back to the Future.
Well, I mean, you know, neither of us suggested it. After we talked about it so much last week plan of doing both, we will get to back. One of these days we'll do Back to the Future. So, all right, well, get ready to spend another week with Ryan O'Neill, Madeline Kahn, Randy Quaid, and a whole cast of characters. We'll see if this one is as funny as What's Up, Doc? Next week when we talk about Paper Moon.
Keep your sunny side up, up, high.
Kansas, 1936. Out of the darkest days of the Depression comes the adventures of two unlikely con artists, Mose Prey and his companion, Addie Loggins.